Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. Joining me today, back. I don't know how to intro you because I haven't had somebody back on who I had to take their episode down for certain reasons before. It's my friend Niles Abston.
What's up? industry bullshit, but I'm back.
This is my first industry bullshit repeat guest. Happy to have you back on. It's such a shame that people won't be able to hear the but we got a great episode for you today because you're talking about a movie that is very close to like one of the first movies that I ever remember actually hating.
Yeah, same.
And that is Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Horrible ass movie.
Horrible movie.
Yeah, I think I was 13 when it came out.
Yeah, I was 17. I remember seeing it in the summer. I think it was the summer after my summer after my junior year of high school.
It's really crazy with that movie because it is one of the first movies I remember just like hating so much. Mm-hmm. But it's wild because the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire because I was like 7 when that came out. So that was like one of the first movies I really remember like going to a theater with friends and like going to go see it and having a good time. So it's crazy that like 6 years later it turned into this thing where I'm just like, this is fucking terrible. But the first movie and the second movie were two of the first like big movies I remember not going to a theater with my parents. I went with my friends and like mm-hmm. we had a good time. So it's just crazy that like the third one ended up being like the first movie I like went and was like, I want my money back. That was fucking terrible.
Dude, I remember seeing this. Did you see this? Were you the like midnight release?
Yeah.
First weekend out.
My friend's mom dropped us off. We went to go see it. We were like in line and shit. Yeah, we were there.
Man. See, that's what I did. I remember like very vividly seeing it at. Yeah, it was the midnight screening. So I was 16 when it came out. I remember it was beginning of the summer. Yeah. I was 16, seeing it with all my friends. We'd seen Spider-Man 2 in theaters. I think we'd all seen Spider-Man together in theaters. And we're like, all right, Spider-Man 3. This movie is going to be great. We're going to have a great time. And we all saw it at midnight. And I remember like the first time that something happened that was funny, but unintentionally funny, and everybody laughing, and everybody like it ruined the experience so quick of what we thought this movie was going to be. And it just like it soured the whole experience. It was the first time I think all of us were like, what the fuck did we just watch?
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, man. I just like walking into the Tinseltown at my hometown and just like, this is, what did we do?
Yeah.
Like I think we couldn't even talk about it after the fact. I feel like we just sat in silence in the car ride.
Because it really didn't make sense because of how good the first two.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first two are two of the best superhero movies like ever. Like those movies are so good. Like they're just, even if like just straight up, not even from like a superhero movie standpoint, they're just very well made films. Like they're really good movies. Mm-hmm. The characters are great. Like Tobey Maguire is amazing. Kirsten Dunst, he who shall not be named, that played his friend.
Yeah. And Alfred Molina's great as Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2.
Oh my God. I just call him Doc Ock whenever I see him because he's just such, he killed that shit. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, you got these two amazing superhero movies and then they just took a shit afterwards. And it was like, yo, what the, like, what were y'all doing?
Dude, I don't know, man.
There's a dance number in that shit. Like,
dude, it's so weird. I remember the scene now too that we all laughed at. It was after he goes into the alley. He's just defeated Sandman for the first time after like destroying property in the sewer system.
Yeah,
clearly without regard for people. And he goes and he's walking down an alley and he sees like a broken mirror. And then he does this to his hair and he puts it all down, all emo style in his face.
Yeah.
And he just stares at himself. He's like, yeah. And then he walks away. And we're like, what is happening in this movie?
The whole, like, the Sandman thing never really made sense in the movie. He was kind of there fucking shit up. Like, it didn't make any sense. It was like, I think they're just like, well, we have this much of a budget, so we can go Michael Bay on these niggas real quick. Let's just explode shit.
Yeah.
That's the Sandman in there. Like, but the Sandman being in the movie, like, made no sense, really. Like, it didn't have really much to do with the plot.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest upon rewatch that I actually, from an analytical perspective, can now say the biggest problem with the movie is the entire inclusion of Sandman as a character.
Didn't make any sense.
There's no need for him. They tried to retcon him in with the killing of his uncle and all this stuff, doing these flashbacks and trying to have him get some sympathy for his daughter. But there's no point. His whole plot line.
Something about his daughter, right? He was trying to get money for his daughter or.
Yeah, his daughter was like on an oxygen tank or something. Oh. It's we got a sick kid out of central casting.
Yeah.
Let's get the most frail little girl we can.
I hate when they use that as plot points now. It's like, it's so overdone. Like, we get it. We get it. The healthcare system's terrible. Like,
yeah.
Write something different. Jesus.
Yeah, I think but that's the other thing is, like, I thought that was a big problem. There's so many little problems with the movie too, though. Like, you go from having the good acting of your leads from the previous two movies, and it seems like where you were able to get – where Sam Raimi was – I don't know why I'm saying you. Where Sam Raimi was able to get the good, like, a heartfelt, like, growing teenager coming out of their high school and college experience.
Yeah. That first movie, like, Willem Dafoe being the villain was crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just amazing.
Yeah.
And I think they had done such a good job getting these, like, actors who had kind of built up a career of just playing these, like, really great, well-acted characters in, like, regular drama films, and they got them to come play villains. So you like Alfred Molina as Doc Ock, Willem Dafoe. And so I was like, we're used to seeing that. And then I was like, yeah, Topher Grace is Venom. Like,
Topher Grace, man. Why did they make Topher Grace Venom?
That shit didn't make any sense. I have a theory. Okay. I have a theory that Topher Grace also auditioned to be Peter Parker, and whoever the producer was felt like he owed him one. And so they let him play Venom.
You know, I'd believe that, because Venom was added as a producer's idea.
No.
Yeah. So originally Sam Raimi wanted it to be Sandman and somebody else.
Okay.
And one of the producers, this guy, Avi Arad, and he requested with Sam Raimi, he's like, let's add Venom to this thing. And they also added Gwen Stacy, who's like another character that is.
That didn't make any sense either.
Yeah.
Gwen Stacy add, because she didn't do anything like the comic books at all. The way they used her, it didn't really make any sense.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine who was huge into the Spider-Man comic books, and he was so mad that they didn't do the big Gwen Stacy plotline from the comics of having Spider-Man accidentally kill her.
Yeah.
That would have been a crazy thing to have in this movie. Right. It would have added some actual drama and some stakes.
Yeah, not just changing your hair and dancing and acting weird now. Mm-hmm. Peter, you're different. How many times did they tell him that in the movie? Like, Jesus Christ. There's so many actors that were just like, Peter, you just seem different, man. Are you all right? Like, all right.
Yeah. It's just standing in a hallway taking advantage of this poor, like, daughter of the landlord. Making her make him cookies and feed them to him while he talks on the payphone. He's just an asshole.
Yeah. No, like, he literally just, it turned him into an asshole. Because I really think some producer was probably doing coke or something and saw Spider-Man in black and was just like, we have to do that. That would just look cool on the DVD cover.
Oh, it looks so cool.
Back then, it was all about the DVD cover looking cool. So you buy it when you go to Walmart or you go to Best Buy, right?
Yeah.
And so I really think, like, that's why. Like, it was like, oh, like Spider-Man in black will just look really cool. So they just, like, did the Venom thing. And I was like, it just wasn't.
It's just weird, man. Like, and I'm looking at the poster. That's the thing. Everything about this movie should have been cool. Like, I remember – I'm looking at the poster right now. It's Spider-Man in red against Spider-Man in black in the reflection. The battle within. That's a great tagline for a movie where you're fighting within yourself to, like, who are you going to be?
Right.
But they didn't need to add all of this extra shit. Honestly, I think that beyond the Sandman plotline, all the stuff with Harry Osborn, we didn't really necessarily need that either.
Nope.
There's just no need.
Because, like, Topher Grace's character, I'm blanking. Like, how did they even, like, how did they introduce him? Like, how did he...
They introduce him in the most... By the way, so this movie also is a 2-hour and 20-minute-long movie. They introduce him at almost 40 minutes into the movie.
Wow.
And it's just the biggest exposition dump. He literally is just some guy who shows up with a camera, because he's a photographer, Eddie Brock. And he's taking pictures of Gwen Stacy as she's like, there's this crane disaster that happens that Spider-Man has to save him from. And he's like, oh, wow, this is crazy. I can't believe this is going on. And he's talking to Gwen Stacy's dad, who's a cop. And is like, and the cop's like, who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm a photographer. Oh, I'm dating your daughter. My name's Eddie Brock. I'm a guy. And then it just cuts away. And then he has some, we're supposed to follow him along for the entire movie. But it's so frustrating, Niles. Frustrating watching this movie.
I wonder if they just like, because they probably, maybe they shot too much and they cut a lot of his backstory out, maybe.
I don't know, man. This is, and here's an interesting thing that I didn't realize. So, you know, sometimes they'll release a movie with a director's cut. They did an editor's cut of this movie.
That's interesting.
Yeah, the editor's cut was released in 2017.
Wow.
It features unused music, is 2 minutes shorter than the theatrical cut, and has scenes that are shifted around or completely removed, includes 3 new scenes, 3 alternate scenes, and 1 extended scene.
Wow.
So a lot of the problem with this movie, I would imagine, came down from the producing side. I don't think Sam Raimi contributed to the downfall of this movie. The acting, I do think, had some problems with, like, Topher Grace.
Well, apparently, yeah. Toby didn't want to do it, right?
Yeah, and you can tell he's phoning it in.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't think he wanted to do it, because I think going into it, a few of the actors didn't really like the story, mm-hmm. didn't like where it was going, but they were locked in to a Sony contract, so they had to do it.
But yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, I remember reading like he didn't even want to do the movie.
Yeah, and that's the they also wanted to have a totally different extra villain that they wanted to have too. They wanted to get Ben Kingsley in to play Vulture.
See, I just don't get why we haven't got a Spider-Man movie with the Sinister Six yet. Like, I don't really understand. Like, why haven't they made that happen?
Are you a really big, like, Spider-Man and comic books guy?
Yeah, well, Spider-Man's my favorite superhero ever.
Okay.
Because
I
feel like he's the closest thing to a black in the Marvel universe. Like, he's a dude that lives in Queens that would deliver pizza, and he's broke, and he lived with his aunt and his uncle. Like, that's, like, the closest thing to a black dude in the Marvel universe. Like, I don't have anything in common with T'Challa. Like, the dude's a king and went to like the best college and shit. His parents are rich. I don't have anything. I have so much more in common with Peter Parker than I do with T'Challa and Luke Cage. I don't have anything in common with Luke Cage. Like, he's like nice and shit. Bro. Peter Parker. That's who I have probably the most in common in the Marvel universe.
But you, unlike the Peter Parker in this movie, would never be seen, I think, doing a dance number in the middle of the street.
No, I would not. I just don't even understand, like, how did that even come about, and like who that, like that, like I'm in this little industry, and the amount of people that have to say yes and sign off on things to get the smallest of shit going.
Mm-hmm.
That many people was like, yeah, this dance number is a good idea.
Yeah. I think here's my theory. All right. There's so much of this movie that feels very disparate. Everything is sort of in these different little realms. And especially having watched this compared to so many of the Marvel and superhero movies that I've seen over the past, you know, 10, 13 years.
Right.
This movie is clearly trying in some points to do the thing that Marvel movies especially did later on, which was have a lot of like comedy and snark and stuff baked in addition to these really cool action sequences. The problem is, from the way I see it at least, is that the comedy stuff, it felt so jarring for it to happen that way and for it to be such a hard shift from being like, hey, it's we're dealing with like Peter Parker being awkward in high school and like trying to dance his way around this crush he has on Mary Jane the way we feel in the first movie, into all of a sudden a whole sequence happening where he's like having this piano playing like Will Ferrell in Anchorman at a jazz club and doing this crazy comedic sequence that just feels so out of place.
Right.
And then you also, on top of that, have these bad, like the action sequences are not nearly as fun as, or death-defying as the first two movies felt like. Like when he's stopping the train in Spider-Man 2, I feel the stakes of that.
Yeah.
And this, when he's like surfing around on a door in the street, chasing down an armored car, I don't feel that.
It doesn't make any sense. It like the whole, like that whole movie just was like tonally different from the first two.
How, as somebody who loves Spider-Man so much, how does it feel watching a character who you love degrade over time the way that Spider-Man and Peter Parker did over the course of these three movies?
Especially being a kid, like it hurts, man. Cause like you just go and see the movie and you're just like, this is what they came up with. They had $100 million and all these people at their disposal and a whole studio. And this is what they came up with. Like it was really mind blowing. Like I like to think it was like a prank. Like there was like, there's no way like they meant to do, like this was done on purpose. Like, you didn't really set out to make a good movie and then drop this on us. Like, there's no way. Like, I was honestly appalled.
There's a lot of stuff that does kind of feel like it's a prank on the audience, too. Like, I can't believe they're going to let us get away with this.
Yeah. That's why, like, when they did the dance number, I was just like, okay, they're fucking with us. Or, like, maybe they're just tired of Toby and, like, we're going to make you do something so demeaning that you'll never forget this for the rest of your life. And it's going to take great Gatsby to get you back on track. And that's going to happen 4 years.
I've never seen Great Gatsby.
I don't remember, It's a great movie. And okay. Tobey Maguire is amazing in it. But I really don't. What did he do between 2009 and 2013?
I don't know, man. I'm going to look.
I don't think he really did anything after that Spider-Man movie. Like that shit really, that shit fucked a lot of people's shit. Like Kirsten. Yeah. I didn't see Kirsten Dunst in anything for a minute.
Yeah, this movie really, like, I mean, we were just talking beforehand. Sam Raimi's directorial career took a hard shift. There's a big fallout from this movie. He was supposed to direct Spider-Man 4, and then the reaction to this. And keep in mind, we both are like, this movie is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Critics at the time didn't think this movie was that bad.
Really?
It got like a 68 on Rotten Tomatoes. And CinemaScore gave it a B+ from opening weekend.
Really?
Yeah. It got this. It's got a 63% on Rotten Tomatoes, not a 68, but it's got, some people saying it's the most complex and deftly orchestrated superhero epic ever filmed. Jonathan Ross says it's the best of the trilogy, a guy on BBC One. Richard Corliss of Time magazine commended the filmmakers for their ability to dramatize feelings of angst and personal betrayal worthy of an Ingmar Bergman film and then to dress them up in gaudy comic book colors. What are these reviews?
They don't know what they're talking about. And then I think what made it even look even worse is because The Dark Knight came out, what, the year before?
Year after that.
Oh, the year after that.
Yeah, okay. It was 08.
Okay. But what was the first one?
Batman Begins was right before, and Batman Begins blows this movie out of the water.
Exactly, Batman. So I know, like the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy had started by the time this right before this movie came out. So I think that's what made it even look worse because it's just like, well, they did it right. What's wrong with you guys? Like, what are y'all doing? So it's just I don't know, man.
I mean, here's
too many people. Like those kind of movies, those studio movies, it's just too many people's hands on them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's hard to make a good movie with those big IPs. Like, if somebody can turn like a book or a comic book or something that we all know and love that in a different medium into a good movie, that's like, you're a really good director, because like the studios, they own the rights to it. So like they have all, they already have all their ideas they want to do. Then each producer has something, cause they all have an attachment to it. And there's like all these little things that everybody's trying to do to the adaptation. But the shitty thing about that is nobody knows who, like, these people I have meetings with at these studios, nobody knows who those people are. Mm-hmm. Their name isn't directed by or written by when the credits scroll down. So everybody's like, man, Sam Raimi fucking sucks. And it's like a lot of shit that happened in that movie. Sam Raimi might not have even really had the leverage to be like, I don't want to do that or argue. Right. A lot of times they'll be like, okay, cool. We'll just find the next schmuck that'll just come do what we say. Like, mm-hmm. that happens a lot, because I remember there was one of the Star Wars movies, was it the last, the episode 9 that wasn't very good. The guy who was going to direct it, he dropped out months before because right. He felt like the producers just had too much of a chokehold on the project and what they were going to do. And mm-hmm. a lot of those big IPs, the script, like a lot of people don't know this, the scripts are changing like every week because yeah. people leak those scripts or like one of the actors who gets signed on to play like a side character that's an A-list actor, he doesn't like that he doesn't get enough lines. So it's just like those big IP, like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and Marvel and the book, like all the Hunger Games, all that kind of shit, that shit is like forever changing. Like
yeah.
until they actually shoot that shit. And then there's so much money put into it. So a lot of times like the director is just working with whatever was just left and whatever they let them do. It's kind of like a blessing and a curse, because like if you can pull off one of those big IP movies, like you can do whatever you want. But right. if you do it bad, all the fans of those books or comic books are going to hate you for the rest of your life.
Right. And they're never going to be able to look at it as anything other than your fault.
Yeah.
Like so Spider-Man 4 was originally going to be, you know, released right after this. Sam Raimi was going to direct. Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, they were all going to come back.
Wow.
They had planned a fourth and a fifth film at the same time. They were going to shoot the two sequels back to back, and then they hired one screenwriter. And then a year went by. A second screenwriter got hired, and then another year went by, and then a third screenwriter got hired, and then they kept changing everything up. And then eventually, Sam Raimi was just like, you know what, I'm out. I don't have time for this bullshit anymore.
Yeah, because he wanted to do his horror movie.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you're spot on about the way that people look at IP, too. Because I think it's so hard to please fans of a franchise that have loved that character and known an iteration of that character for so, so long. Right. Like when you're 13, you're not thinking about like, oh, well, this studio really fucked over my favorite character. No, you're thinking Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire fucked over my favorite character.
Tobey Maguire's fault. Tobey Maguire didn't write none of that shit.
No. Tobey Maguire probably doesn't. Tobey Maguire doesn't want to be a meme forever for being shitty emo Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But he is.
That sucks so bad. God.
He's stuck, man. Tobey Maguire did a little bit after this. Not a whole lot. He did like some indie stuff. He was
when big actors do like a bad movie, that's when they start doing favors for their friends who are directors that are trying to get some indie movie off the ground. Like, okay, let's go hang out with my friends on set for 20 days. Like, that'll get my head right. They always go do these little indie movies that you never see.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He was a king. He played himself in Tropic Thunder.
Right.
He was in this movie Brothers in 2009, and then he did a couple. He did Great Gatsby. He did a lot of TV. He produced a lot of TV, and he was in. I didn't know this. He was in The Boss Baby. He was the narrator in The Boss Baby.
Wow, I did not know that.
Good for you, Toby.
I don't see him ever doing like another like big tentpole movie like that again. That shit's probably traumatizing.
Never. especially if you're the person who goes from being seen as the embodiment of the character to being viewed as the worst version of the character. And that's saying something, considering how many times Spider-Man has been rebooted and done over and over again, where people are like, well, we don't like this guy anymore. We don't like Andrew Garfield. Let's bring in Tom Holland. And Tom Holland's probably got a shelf life on him too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Tom Holland has done well the first two movies, but this next one that comes out, if it's shitty, then everybody's gonna be like, he fucking sucks. So it's it's really a gift and a curse. Cause like with those big movies, it's hard. Like you said, it's hard to please like fans. And then you also have to please the people that put the money into it, which is more important. So it's like, that's why like a lot of these big actors that like do these Star Wars movies, you don't really see them in a lot of big movies after that. Cause I don't think they want to do any big movies anymore after that shit.
Right.
Like Samuel L. Jackson is really like the only person you've seen like do big tentpole movies again, like after doing a Star Wars movie. And I think that was because like he wasn't really like a huge character. Like Mace Windu wasn't like a big pivotal character in Star Wars. It was just kind of like George Lucas just fucked with Samuel Jackson and was like, I want you in my movie. So like with him, he did. But like if you look at a lot of those other people that have been in Star Wars, like they're not going and doing some big movie again after that. Because a lot of their studios don't trust you anymore, or they're traumatized from this shit, or just like because Star Wars fans are like the worst.
John Boyega and Oscar Isaac certainly aren't doing anything big.
Yeah, they don't want to. I wouldn't want to do any more big movies because it's just those Star Wars fans are something else, and I feel like Marvel fans like right next after that.
Dude, well, especially I would hate to do a movie and have the faith put in me to like be the person who's going to take this franchise to the big screen.
Yeah.
And for a legion of like shitty fans to be shitty to me forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
I tell people like all the time, if like, and they'll do it for anything. Like if Get Out was a book first and then the movie came out, people would be like, it wasn't like the book. That was fucking terrible. Mm-hmm. It could have been the exact same movie we watched, but if it had been a book first, people would have been saying it was shitty. But because there was nothing you could compare it to, it's an amazing movie. And I love that movie. But if it had been a book, people would have been saying that same shit. And the way he portrayed it, it just wasn't like the book. It just wasn't like, duh, bro. That's why it's a fucking book. it's different.
I have a question for you that I feel like you're going to have a good answer for. I'm intrigued.
Okay.
So, you know, you're in addition to being a great comic, you're a writer, you're a filmmaker, you do all that stuff. What if there was like an IP that was a big budgety IP that you would want to direct or write or both? What would you want to do that you feel like you could pull off and have a good take on?
That's a good question. I think I got a couple. I would love to write a Static Shock movie.
Oh, that would be fun.
That would be crazy. Another, and they're working on that right now. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. I would love to write a Static Shock movie. What else? I would love to write a Digimon movie, bro.
Dude, I think Digimon needs more credit than it gets.
I think I could kill a live action CGI Digimon movie. Like, I think I could do that shit. I love that show as a kid. I thought it was so dope. I thought the story, because like with me, I felt like the video games for Pokemon were better and the cards and stuff, but storytelling and characters I thought was way better with Digimon. That's what I always felt like, the storytelling, like the TV show was better.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I could do like a dope like Digimon live action movie.
Digimon live action, that would be great.
Yeah, Static Shock, Digimon, and then... I don't know. Ooh, a Zorro movie. I think I could do that too.
Ooh, okay.
I could kill a Zorro. Like,
would you do like old school Zorro, where he's still like it's back in the day, he's on the horse, or would you do like a reboot, like up to date?
Back in the day, cowboys, all that kind of shit. I think I could do that.
That's good. I feel like that's when you're going to have to fight with the studio on. I feel like studio's going to want to put him on a motorcycle or some shit.
Right, something crazy. Let's just give him a black helmet, and he's on a motorcycle, and we're gonna set it in 2056. And I'm like, all right.
And bro, he shoots a gun in a Z.
Yeah. That's probably in development right now. We don't even know.
Probably is. I'm surprised the Digimon movie's not in development already.
I know it should be. Like, I just feel like there's so many fans. Like, all the fans are grown up now. You can make a dope movie like that.
Yeah.
I feel like they did a good job with the Pikachu thing. That was really
Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, that was good. Like the way they introduced the characters and how they made it like look live action. Like, I feel like a Digimon, you could really do a Digimon movie, because like with Digimon, those kids are on this like island that's in a different universe and away from Earth. So like, you could really play with that. Like, I think that would be cool.
Dude, I loved, because that's the thing, is I watched both as a kid, the cartoons of Pokemon and Digimon.
Mm-hmm.
And Pokemon was fine. There are a couple episodes that got me like emotional, like the one where Ash thinks he's going to leave Pikachu behind in the forest.
Yeah.
With all the other Pikachus.
Yeah.
But Digimon, I feel like, got me to that place all the time, because there was a lot of conflict between the friends on that show.
Right. And it was literally kids without adults stuck somewhere. Mm-hmm. And all they had were these creatures, you know? So I thought that, yeah, I think a Digimon, a live action Digimon movie would be really fun, but Static Shock would be crazy. Like, that would be cool. You know what I'm saying?
I watched a little bit of Static Shock growing up. Who's doing the reboot of it? Do you know? Or not the live action version?
Nothing's attached to it publicly. I just know Michael B. Jordan is the executive producer.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but I don't know who's writing, directing, or starring in it. But I just hope they don't try to make it all like serious and he gets shot by the police or some shit. Like, just make it a fun superhero movie. Like, I'm not trying to see all that.
Yeah, I think that's probably good. I feel like, and this is the downside, is because Static Shock's a DC character, and DC loves to do that shit that's like overwrought and serious.
But the thing is, that's why these Tom Holland movies have been so good, is because they were just like, let's just make fun teen movies, and the main character just happens to be Spider-Man. And like, that's why they've worked so well. And so like, they need to take that vibe and put it in Static Shock, because it's just a fun teen show. It was a dude hanging out with his friends, and he had superpowers that he couldn't tell his parents about.
See, I gotta watch that. I would love to watch that version. I don't want to watch a version where he's like, "Oh, I have to deal with this lightning powers is like this is a metaphor for my own humanity or some bullshit like that."
Yeah, he's just a kid, and then the cool thing about Static Shock is like, there's another kid in his high school that has powers as well, but he's a villain, but they don't know who each other are. They just,
that's right.
But they go to the same high school, and I'm just like, that's the movie right there. That's easy. That's fun. They don't know who each other are. And then towards the end, I would do it where towards the end, they find out who each other are, but then they need each other's help to defeat an even bigger villain. Easy movie. 1, 2, 3. There you go.
Great.
Just make it fun. Blow some shit up. It's going to make $800 million if you just don't fuck it up.
Like, Zack Snyder, you better be listening to this, because produce this man's movie, produce this Static Shock movie. Nah, he doesn't. He's probably not listening. No. He might have listened to the Kyle Reel episode to see if we talked shit about him or not. But
what did y'all talk about, the Snyder Cut?
No, we talked about not even that, Uncut Gems. But it was right after his whole like crowd work thing that he did.
Where he was
roasting Zack Snyder and didn't know who he was.
Kyle hated Uncut Gems.
Yeah, man.
I'm going to have to talk to him about that. That pisses me off.
It's one of those, I couldn't, all the reasons that I love that movie are the reasons he hated that movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Oh, it's just God. One of those things. I can't convince somebody to like something. Yeah,
it's all subjective.
Yeah. It's not like, subjective.
It's funny how like art is so subjective, but there are certain things that are just so good that like everybody likes them, like Good Kid, Mad City. Like, there's there's no subjectivity. If you don't like Good Kid, Mad City as a rap album, you're just a fucking idiot. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's those type of things are, you know, it's funny how that works. But there are always like a few things that are just so good.
Yeah, you can't shit on something like Good Kid, Mad City, right? You can't shit on like Shawshank Redemption or something. Really,
you can't. You really can't.
Even for all, like, I'm not somebody who's like, oh, Shawshank movie is not one of my top even 100 movies. Mm-hmm. But I still can watch it and be like, yeah, this is a really well-made, well-constructed movie. I can see why it's got so many people who absolutely love this thing.
Yeah.
I can't.
I felt like a movie that was kind of like that was The Hangover. I felt like it was I felt like it was so funny that even people that don't like that kind of lewd type of comedy were still like, it's really good. It's a good movie. Like, it was just, it was like, and then like the time it came out and everything. But yeah, there, every few years there's something that comes out that it doesn't matter subjectivity, what you're into. It's just that good that you gotta fuck with it. You know,
dude, the fact that The Hangover won a Golden Globe for best comedy.
And usually with that, they don't really go with the best comic. Because, like, usually the comedies that are nominated for the Golden Globe are, like, they're movies, like, I call them, they're just not dramas all the way. They're not comedies, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, they're like those movies. You know those movies where they'll have something, like, a character will say something and, like, everybody will laugh, like, in the movie. But you're watching it and you're not laughing at it. You're like, that's not funny. Like, those are the type of comedies that win best, like, Golden Globe best comedy. Yeah. Like
it's
funny to the characters in the movie because they're there.
The movies that won.
It's not funny to you. But usually they're good movies. They're just, I wouldn't call them comedies, though.
For some, like, it's Vicky Cristina Barcelona won the year before. Sweeney Todd won before that. Dreamgirls beat out Borat the year before that.
Right. Because the way they do it is, like, comedy and musical, which I wish they would. Stop doing that shit. Like, just have three different categories. The award show's 3 fucking hours anyway. You can add one more. Like,
well, now I don't think there's going to be a Golden Globes anymore. So we'll see.
I don't think so. I think that's over.
So, it seems like it's all done.
Had a dream of winning one day, but that ain't happening. So,
hey, Critics' Choice. That's going to be the new hotness.
You think so?
Oh yeah. They already picked up for that time slot.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Do they do comedy? Because, like, a lot of award shows don't do comedy.
Critics' Choice, I think, does comedy. I think they do really granular. Like, they're a combo of Oscars stuff and then also the kind of stuff you'd see at, like, the MTV Movie Awards.
Okay. So, I feel like the Oscars need to add, like, best comedy and best horror.
Yes.
Like, I feel like that would be cool. Because then I feel like if you kind of break it up and then you have best picture, which is comprised, because I feel like you should do, like, best drama, best comedy, best horror, best sci-fi, best indie. And then you take the winners of each of those and then you do best picture out of that.
Oh, like, okay.
Best picture should come out of the movies that have already won something. You know what I'm saying?
Because like that.
You'll have a movie that wins best director, best actor, best script, and then another movie will win best picture. Well, how is that the best picture if this other movie has the best actor, the best director, and the best script? Ain't that the three things that you need? I was like, I don't understand. You'll have a movie that wins best picture, but then none of the actors from the movie are nominated for anything.
Right.
Because that was, I think that was Parasite. Parasite went Best Picture, which I thought was the best movie in like the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. But none of the actors get nominated for anything. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. How's it the best picture if nobody in the movie is good enough to be the best actor, best actress, or best
support? It's crazy. Because also, they were good enough. For sure, they were good enough.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't make any sense. So I'm just like, who is picking this? And that's why I think like Best Picture should be comprised of which movies win the most awards or they win like they're, if you just break it into genre, that would make it way easier. So like that way you have the best comedy, the best drama, the best sci-fi, the best horror, and the best indie movie all battling out for best picture. Cause that would be, if all these movies won their category, then they should have a shot at best picture.
But that's the other thing too, is like the Academy does not respect horror movies
or
comedies. Yeah. Like occasionally something will slip through, but even like some of my favorite movies from the past 5 years, Hereditary and The Babadook and frankly Uncut Gems too, which is a really, I mean, it's a dark comedy, but it's a comedy.
That not getting nominated for anything was just, that was kind of a blow to me because I was just like, well, that's the kind of shit I want to make. So I guess I just need to just know that, hey, you ain't winning shit because that, like, I haven't really met anybody. It's crazy. That's why I want to talk to Kyle because I haven't come across anybody that was just like, I hated it. Like, there are some people that be like, oh, I feel like there could have been this different or this different. But, like, for the most part, everybody I've talked to either liked the movie or at least thought it was good or was in love with it. Because I just thought it was so interesting just the pacing of the movie and how they had this horrible person, and but you still root for him. And that's why somebody said that movie doesn't work without Adam Sandler, because they said like Adam Sandler's built his whole career doing these movies of these dopey dudes you fall in love with.
Right.
And so now he plays this guy, he plays Howard, and they're like, so they kind of trick you into liking Howard by having Adam Sandler playing. I was like, wow, it's genius.
It's genius.
But that movie was just so good. And then just like the way, and like, it's like, they even talked about it, like it's like paced like a basketball game, the movie. And then like basketball is like this overarching theme in it. And just the way like it all unfolds and everything, like with him. Cause I think they said when they first got the idea for the movie, him dying at the end was like the first thing that they thought of. Like that was always going to be part of it. And so I was like, I love the Safdie brothers. I can't wait.
The Safdie brothers are great. Their next movie, I know, is something. They're developing something that sounds really fucking cool. They're developing something with Nathan Fielder too for TV, which I am really excited about.
That's a cool team up. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a pilot. It's a parody of an HGTV show that involves like a haunting happening. Okay. And oh man. And then also the Safdies are supposed to be doing, oh no, they're not. They're doing they're originally going to do a remake of 48 Hours written with Gerard co-writing it.
Yeah.
They're changing it a little bit now too. So we'll see how that all winds up going. But
if Gerard's writing it, I trust it. We'll see.
Yeah.
I love when they give comedians a shot. It's interesting when they usually give a comedian a shot to do some shit, it always works out. So I'm just like, why don't they just let comedians do everything?
Yeah. Well, because we understand humanity in a very different way than
I'm telling you, it's
non-comedians.
And I know I'm biased because we do this shit every day and we know comics, but it's just like comedians are the most creative people, bro. Cause I was thinking about that, like I put a special out and I was like, me and a friend were talking, it's like a comedy special is essentially a movie, you're the only character and you're just telling stories. If you ever watched a movie where a dude sat in a chair and just talked into the camera and told a story for the whole time, you'd be like, this is the worst movie of all time. But comedians do it all the time and they're amazing. But we can figure out a way to keep your attention for an hour. We can make you cry. We can make you laugh. We make you angry. We make you think. We make you reminisce. We do all these things. And it's just us talking into a microphone. So imagine if you gave us all these resources to do like a real story, you know what I'm saying? And so it's just, I think comedians are just so creative in the way we trick people into agreeing with us sometimes. Like all these, like, cause like I've had shows where somebody was just like, I like changed my opinion on something just with listening to your joke. And I'm like mad at myself now. And I was just laughing. Like that's like the power that we have. Like we can really manipulate words and all these kind of things, and I'm just like, just let more comedians make movies. Or
hey, like, look, it worked great for Jordan Peele. Gerard just won an award at Sundance.
I can't wait to see Gerard's movie. I heard it's amazing.
I'm so excited to see it.
He like swept Sundance. I was trying to get some like online live stream tickets, but they sold out. Like But yeah, I heard it's great. They said it's super dark, but it's like also
funny. I mean, the synopsis of it is it's like Suicide Pact. But it's written by a comedian starring Gerard. It's going to be have total faith in that movie. And directed, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that shit. And then, like, Tiffany Haddish is in it and J.B. Smoove is in it, too. So, yeah, I'm excited. So, it should be interesting. Like, if that movie's a hit, I feel like it'll open shit up for, like, more comedians making stuff. Or if anything, Gerard can just start producing more stuff that comedians make and everything.
I hope so.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, speaking of specials, speaking of your special, where can people watch that? Girls Don't Twerk to Jokes.
Yeah, Girls Don't Twerk to Jokes. You can watch it on YouTube. Literally just type in Niles Ashton, Girls Don't Twerk to Jokes. Or if you're more of a listening type person, you can listen to it on Spotify or Apple Music. I don't care how you watch it or listen to it. I'm not making no money off of it. So check it out.
Dude, you got to get a sound exchange check way.
It takes like 6 months for that shit to like all come together. So it's still a little process and everything. So we'll see.
I will say when it finally does happen for you, I just got my first sound exchange check like a week ago. And I was like, it really wasn't that much, but I was like, this is enough. This is like, More this than is what the I, combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And you got the clown cast that you do with Harper Rose.
Yeah, definitely check the clown cast with Harper Rose out. We just did a live show in LA. When is this coming out?
This will be out on Monday.
Okay. Yeah, on Monday we're basically announcing like we're gonna be doing shows in Chicago, New York, Kansas City, and Columbus, Ohio. So if you're out there and you listen to this, follow me on Twitter at Niles100 and you can get the ticket information and all that.
Go get that. Niles is a great comic. You're gonna love watching him live. And you can find me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, jlightcomedy.com for show dates, mostly live, a couple live streams. But yeah, dude, this has been great. It's so great to have you back on on for the first time, depending on who's listening to this.
Right.
We didn't talk shit about anybody else beforehand. Why would we do that?
Nope.
This has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.